This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com and, of course, on the air right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And I have a question for you. Have you ever heard of the Berry Amendment? Not talking about Mayor Marion Barry or anything. This is something that came around the World War II era that has directed the Defense Department to buy only American with regard to supplies. You see, you join the Army, you enlist, they hand you your stuff, you line up after getting your haircut, they give you a bag of stuff. And that stuff is supposed to be all from America. However, there are some things missing from that bag, and those of you who have gone through this process know what I'm referring to. Ladies, men, good luck on your underwear and sneakers, among other things. Here with more from Bloomberg News is Kathleen Miller, who's written an article called Sneakers to Women's Underwear for Troops Skirt by American Law. Kathleen, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Alan. I appreciate it.
So I'm reading this, you know, I'm feeling rather patriotic as I'm going, well, look at that. They're forcing you, they're giving you American products, yet some essential products are missing from this bag. They're giving you money to go out and buy whatever you want.
Exactly.
And it may not necessarily be American, kind of skirting the law.
That's right. Yeah. And that's what, you know, the House of Representatives just decided. Just last month, they passed an amendment to defense spending legislation that would require the Pentagon to give new recruits American-made sneakers, or ensure that that's what they're putting on their feet. Right now, they just kind of steer clear of the whole issue by giving recruits vouchers and saying, you know, go to the military exchange stores, get the footwear, the athletic footwear that you need for boot camp. And, you know, if it happens to be Nike, so be it. And Nike has told me they do not have any 100% American-made shoes.
New Balance, a company that has been in existence now since 1906. Well before the Buy American law was put into place, is now raising their hand going, hello, look at me, look at me. Have they managed to push the bar at all?
Yeah, I mean, they said they just found out about the Berry Amendment and the fact that recruits weren't getting American-made sneakers about 5 years ago. And they were kind of shocked and they thought, well, hey, this should be easy. We've got this law. We've got some American-made shoes. You know, let's get soldiers into those shoes. And it hasn't been that easy.
Right.
It took about 3 years, they said, of hardcore lobbying, and they teamed up with companies like Wolverine Worldwide, which is, I think, more known for some of their work boots and stuff that can also make American-made athletic footwear, and you know, just had this big success in the House of Representatives last month.
1906 is when the company came around. I did a little digging on New Balance. Our heritage, if I take a look at NewBalance.com. In 1906, William Riley was inspired by, do you know what he was inspired by?
I think it's a chicken foot,
right? A chicken foot. You got it. A chicken foot to create a new way to meet the needs of consumers in motion. Now more than 100 years later, still American-made in Massachusetts, and they're pushing the bar, as well they should, considering the Berry Amendment. Now, do you think Congress is on board? They're saying, yeah, this is great, but will there be detractors saying, you know what, this is our voucher, we're giving them. It's our money, so to speak. Should they be a bargain shop?
You know, some economists that I interviewed said just that. Look, as we all know, this is a hard time for the federal government. They're trying to cut costs everywhere they can, and price should be the driver of all the Pentagon's decisions. Under sequestration, you know, they're trying to find savings wherever they can, and if they find a shoe made outside the country that meets the needs of new recruits and it's cheaper, they should go for that.
All right. Well, only time will tell so far. We're speaking to Kathleen Miller. She's a reporter for Bloomberg who's written Sneakers to Women's Underwear for Troops Skirt by American Law. We've covered the sneaker aspect. There's a quote in here. I think women are probably more particular about their underwear than men. I would have to say that's that's a fair statement. So
I'm married. My husband would definitely agree with that, too.
I had the opportunity to go underwear shopping with my wife over the weekend.
Lucky man.
Yeah. So guys out there who may not have significant others who have never gone through this process, it's not as glorious as one may think. Trust me on this. So boxers, you just throw boxers or briefs at a man. Mm-hmm. Woman, they're actually giving them a choice. Is that the right thing to do? Or where should we go with this?
You know, what kind of surprised me is I interviewed a number of female vets, and they were telling me, you know, to be honest, boot camp in general is not about choice. You know, you're told what to do, what to wear, how to do your hair, you know, no makeup, this, that, and the other. They said they wouldn't really be outraged if they were told you have to wear these American-made shoes. If you're going through that, you're not expecting to have all these options before you in the first place. And they said, as long as the quality is good, as long as the quality's not suffering, you know, that they'd be happy to wear American-made shoes. I was kind of surprised. I expected them tell me that they didn't want anyone picking out their underwear.
A lot of money in vouchers is being spent on stuff that's not made in America.
Mm-hmm.
You've got in here the Air Force spends about $3.9 million on vouchers, according to Colonel Laurel Tingley, a spokeswoman for the service. 30,000 recruits get $75 each year for sneakers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Anywhere. You can buy them at the military exchange. You could probably go off base. And, well, no, I guess it won't work off base since it's a voucher.
Right. And also because you're in boot camp and they won't let you
point.
Off base,
you're
I guess.
You're a prisoner at that point. Interesting story. I mean, does this impact the supplies that the military may have on hand for things like shoes?
Well, Wayne Hall, a spokesman for the Army, did make that point to me when I spoke to him about this. He said, God, can you just imagine the range of sizes that we would have to keep in stock to fit all the different bodies of women that come through here if we got into the business of women's underwear. You know, with men, he said, it's a lot more straightforward. It's men's underwear tends to be based on, you know, waist sizes. So he said small, medium, large, extra large, what have you. They can just put it in people's clothing bags that they get at boot camp. But with women, he thought it could get quite complicated.
We know that Nike has spoken, New Balance has spoken out about this because they are American made. Have any of the other manufacturers stepped up and started lobbying going, but wait, my price point is better or my quality is better. You want them to be able to run and keep their feet healthy. Use my shoes.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. I did reach out to Nike and said, you know, what do you guys have to say about this? And they actually declined to comment. I think they realized, you know, this is not a battle that they necessarily want to fight, just because, you know, hey, it's almost July 4th. They're based in Oregon, so their headquarters are in the U.S., but they're upfront about the fact that they don't offer any 100% American-made shoes.
All right. Well, they're not trying to skirt the system in any way, but apparently the military is. And Kathleen will be there to call him on it.
We'll see. See what happens in the Senate and whether the president gets excited about this. I know 15 senators sent President Obama a letter in April just saying, you know what, do exactly what the House just did. We want you to require the military to put new recruits in American-made shoes. We'll see.
You think after reading those correspondence, he called upstairs to the living quarters and said, Michelle, could you hide my Nikes? Put those Sauconys away for me.
Oh, that's funny. I haven't checked out the president's shoes.
Time to check out the president's footwear. It's Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. Her name is Kathleen Miller, writer with Bloomberg News, that is. Sneakers to women's underwear for troops, skirt by American law. Check it out on Bloomberg.com. Kathleen, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Alan. It was a pleasure.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And my guest now is the man who knows everything about anything that is happening on Capitol Hill. His name is Lauren Duggan with Bloomberg Government. How are you?
Very well. How are you, Alan?
I'm doing well. And while the Congress is off vacationing, back in with their constituents, having a good old time, they're going to have a pile of work left for them when they return. One piece has to do with what the House has to take care of. The Senate managed to pass a pretty comprehensive bill on immigration reform. So they've shipped it off to the House, and the Hastert rule will require Speaker John Boehner to get the majority of the majority to be in cahoots, so to speak. Not really cahoots, but you know what I mean.
Right, to agree on the bill.
Exactly.
And you know, people are calling this the Hastert rule, right. But it's if you looked in the House rule book, you wouldn't find
it. It's an informal thing.
It's an informal thing, and it's mainly in the Republican conference. They have right. this principle, let's call it, because it's not quite a rule, where a majority of the majority has to agree on something before it comes up for a vote. Now, there's been instances where that hasn't been in place, but on this major piece of legislation, that's a line that a lot of Republicans are drawing in the sand,
right.
with even one Republican saying...
Are they using it as an excuse?
I don't know that they're using it as an excuse. I think, though, that the Republicans don't want something advanced when they control the Congress that they really don't agree with. And one member went so far as to say that if John Boehner went ahead with this bill and it didn't meet that test, that his speakership might be in question. So I think it's a major piece of legislation, and it deals with, you know, some big issues. What to do with the 11 million undocumented workers who are here, and what do you tie a path to citizenship or at least legalization to? The main thing here is border security. I think if you watch the last bit of the Senate debate for that last week, they talked a lot about the border surge, this idea that we're going to double the number of Border Patrol agents, add additional fencing at the border, buy aircraft and surveillance technology to keep an eye on what's going on there. Right. And that and progress on this path of legalization is supposed to be tied to benchmarks there. So that debate's going to play out in the House now. Well, the House has taken a different approach. The Senate has this 1,200-page bill that's comprehensive, deals with all the aspects of immigration policy. The House committees are doing piecemeal approaches. So one bill on border security, one bill on high-skilled visas, one bill on agricultural workers, instead of all things in one big package. So figuring out how to advance a bill, what's in it, how to bring it to the floor, doesn't meet that majority. The majority test are going to be big issues. There is an illegal immigration problem that probably needs to be solved, and that's what they're trying to do with this bill.
It should be interesting once they return and start addressing that. Another area where people are going to be, or are now, probably up in arms, I mean, if I was in this situation, I think I'd be a little bit upset, has to do with student loans.
Right.
Loan prices have gone up to more than 7% in some cases. What needs to happen to turn this boat back around?
Well, what happened is on July 1st, a temporary lowered rate of 3.4% for some of these subsidized loans went up to 6.8%, and that's already happened. Congress can, when it gets back, fix it, adjust the rates, make them retroactive. It was a temporary rate that was put into place, and then they deal with it when we got to July 1st of this
year. Sounds like sequestration.
Right. Well, you know, life is a series of cliffs, I guess, is really what it's like in Congress. The problem is that the House and the Senate don't really agree yet on what to do. The House has passed a bill that would have variable interest rates tied to some Treasury notes, while the Senate has several different proposals. One would be a straight one-year extension of the old 3.4% rate, a bipartisan group's trying to come up with variable rates and figure out a way forward on this. The idea with the variable rates long-term means you don't have to readdress this. A one-year extension means you'll be back here at this debate again in a year, and House Republicans led by John Klein, who heads the Education Committee in the House, has already said we're not going to do an extension if you send it. We need to address this, have a long-term policy, give families some sort of long-term picture for what the rates are going to be.
With the economy the way it is today, I have the perfect solution to this. We give each one of them a child who they may very well have children.
Many do.
College-age children who have just recently graduated. They've reached that period where they have to begin paying back those loans. And because of the shape of the economy, they've now lost their jobs and can't make those payments. And now they're leaning on their parents to assist. What do you think? I got a story here?
Yeah. It could be. I mean, you know, I think that maybe at town halls they're going to hear a little bit about this.
Yeah.
Probably not the top issue in a lot of people's minds.
Sure.
And maybe people haven't felt it yet because maybe the rates haven't kicked in or whatever. And, you know, thankfully Congress has some time to address this. They can make it retroactive, take care of it, whatever the new approach is. And, you know, I think that this is definitely a July item. They probably won't leave without taking care of this.
Right.
But some people thought they wouldn't leave in June without taking care of it. And they have for now.
Surprise, surprise. Hence, we have sequestration. Something else in the hands or on the agenda. Definitely the farm bill. So many moving pieces with this. It's up, it's down, it's here, it's there. Give us some of the high notes now and where we are with this process.
Well, we had a really unusual thing happen in June. The House brought up this bill, spent 3 days debating it, and killed it at the end. They rejected it.
Right.
It's a hard bill to write in the House right now because you're trying to balance a lot of different interests. The farm bill, people think of it as the farm bill, it's crop subsidies, it's things like that. The biggest spending item in there is actually the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, food stamps, as many people think of them. And one of the issues here is how much do you pare back spending on that program? The Senate came in at about $4 billion in cuts, the House $20.5 billion. That's a lot for many Democrats who see this as vital assistance to lower income people.
Sure.
And they thought, A, the cuts were already too deep, but some Democrats were willing to go along with it. But the bill also in the House had some rules changes, things like drug testing, perhaps work requirements, and that went a step too far and Democratic support eroded for the bill. And the Republicans were already shaky on it. It passed the majority test, which we already talked about. 171 said okay, but there were 62 that said no, and them with the Democrats tanked the bill.
Right.
How do you move forward? Well, some people are saying, let's split farm subsidies from food stamps. Let's separate the two issues. Well, then there's a whole group of people, more than 500, who signed a letter just this week that said, no, you got to keep them together because that urban-rural alliance that has worked to pass farm bills in recent years needs to be preserved to move these things forward. Because there aren't enough rural members. You need the urban people who get the food stamps and care about that. So it's this delicate dance of legislation. I guess the Republicans have to figure out next, do they split it? Do they do a test vote like that? And if they did split it, what would that mean for reconciling it with the Senate bill, which has already passed with a bipartisan margin? So there's a lot that has to be figured out and to still happen on that bill.
Lots of moving pieces once again, unfortunately. And as their vacation winds down, I'm sure that on the minds of a lot of people as they return to Washington, D.C. will be nominations.
Yes.
Nomination season is upon us. What are we looking at this point?
We're looking at a possible showdown here. Mm-hmm. Democrats are complaining that Republicans have stalled nominees, used the Senate's rules to block their confirmation. And some people are itching for a fight on this one. And what could happen is some of the more controversial nominees. Think about Richard Cordray at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Thomas Perez, the head of the Labor Department, Gina McCarthy at the EPA, and then some judicial nominees. Harry Reid may set up a series of votes here to try and force the Republicans to A, debate them, and B, vote to reject them or not to let them move forward because they don't have 60 votes. That could lead to a showdown over the rules of the Senate and whether those should be changed to prevent filibusters or at least extended debate on some of these nominees. So if that rules change happens, it could be a little messy. It could get a little ugly. The grand traditions of the Senate will be called into question. People will waive constitutions. It'll be an interesting debate. It's a big one. And they avoided this fight at the beginning of the year. There was some talk, let's change the rules at the beginning of the Congress. They didn't, made a few small tweaks that didn't make the advocates for filibuster reform happy. Maybe that battle will happen now, and it'll be very interesting.
All right. Well, the vacation will be over. They'll be back, and we'll be following as closely as you, I'm sure. Congress Tracker is the place to keep up with things like this. Lauren Duggan is his name. He's the man who's in charge of everything congressional here at BGov. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest now is Dr. Peter Brusso. Hello, Doctor.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. So we always have Dr. Brusso in around holidays to discuss the business impact of the holidays on Congress and various other elements that people lobby against. And the Independence Day is no stranger to that as well, especially thinking about how the sky is going to light up over Independence Day weekend throughout. Fireworks companies do a lot of lobbying on the behalf of themselves. Give us an example of what we're talking about here.
Sure. So, Alan, at BGov, we always say that there's an interest group for anyone and everyone. And boy, is that ever true. And so there's actually a group called the American Pyrotechnic Association.
Okay.
Their website's AmericanPyro.org, which is a great website. Go check it out. It's great tips on fireworks safety as well as how to photograph fireworks. And they are the main ones lobbying on fireworks. Mm-hmm. And they spend about $20,000 a year. So they're not a huge lobbying group, but they do spend some money on it.
People really only think about them around the holiday, around Independence Day, New Year's, you know, maybe Super Bowl, big sporting events. You don't really think about fireworks all year long.
Yeah, but it is a year-round business, particularly if you think about like theme parks. Disney World has fireworks all the time.
That's true. Yeah, you're right.
And you have various civic meetings and stuff like that. And one of the big issues for a lot of fireworks companies was with towns and municipalities cutting back on their spending for fireworks. There's been some issues of trying to make sure that fireworks are more widely available.
Yeah.
And so the American Pyrotechnics Association, they represent the manufacturers of fireworks, the professional people who actually make the big shows that we see here in town for the 4th of July.
Right.
And they do a lot of lobbying on a variety of different issues. So one of their big issues is the tariffs on 1.2G and 1.3G fireworks.
That sounds really technical.
It does sound really technical. And I am not a pyrotechnic person. But what happens, a lot of this stuff is imported from foreign countries, and you wind up having to pay extra fees on this.
Yeah.
And so the more money you have to pay with the fireworks, the less money you can have to actually pay for the actual display.
Sure.
So they've been pushing Congress to sort of lower the tariffs they have on those kinds of fireworks when they import them into the country. So they have increased their profit revenue, as well as decreased their actual cost in producing the pyrotechnic shows. And one of the things we've looked here at BGov is not just getting it here in the country, but it's also transporting across state borders.
Right.
Because you have to have special licenses. And so we've seen a lot of lobbying on behalf of the American Pyrotechnic Association, Department of Transportation, when it comes to transportation of hazardous materials and certain commercial driver's licenses you need to have to be able to transport this kind of objects.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of being behind a truck that says explosives. It's not a vehicle I want to be near.
When we think 4th of July, lots of people think about food, but one thing that I always think about is a sporting event, a good old-fashioned baseball game. Good old-fashioned baseball game. What kind of lobbying is done on behalf of Major League Baseball?
Sure. So the commissioner of baseball, who, again, we also have a profile for on BGov, right now they spend about $80,000 a year, $80,000 this past quarter lobbying. Last year they spent about $310,000. Most of their issues revolve around stadium security, making sure that people aren't transporting stuff in that they shouldn't be doing. Immigration issues, particularly as it applies to professional baseball players. As we're bringing in more and more non-citizens to play the game, they want to make sure that they have an easy way of getting through, getting work visas, getting the green cards that they need. Steroids have become an issue. And the other interesting thing is budget issues related to team travel.
Mm-hmm.
Teams tend to fly. They tend to take different ways of getting from point A to point B. And sequestration was a concern for Major League Baseball as it impacts their ability to get their players from point A to point B.
I would imagine overseas travel as well, as a lot of the organizations are now spending a portion of their time playing in other countries to garner interest.
Sure. But, for that stuff, they can do some special planning. The bigger issue is you're going to, if you're the New York Yankees, the world's best baseball team, you can play in New York City on one day.
Not at all. No,
not at all.
None whatsoever.
And then you have to go fly, and play out in California. You want to make sure your team gets there on time without any changes in schedule.
Sure. Something big happened recently. Gettysburg, and we were just discussing this before we came on air a little while ago. You managed to spend some time up there for the 150th celebration. I don't remember all this hoopla around 146 through 149, but 150 seemed to be a pretty big deal.
Sure, no, it's definitely been a huge deal. So the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Battle was this past Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The battle itself went July 1st to July 3rd, and
it
was. For those of you who've seen the movie Gettysburg, have done some reading, The Killer Angels by Charhar. It's this huge event in American history. And so there's been a lot of pushing for ways to commemorate that. We've seen the Gettysburg Foundation, which is the nonprofit that supports the park. They pushed back in 2010 to make sure they had commemorative coins of the battle made up, mm-hmm. as well as pushing for when they issue the Gettysburg Address in November, which is coming up in about 4 months, maybe being able to commemorate that. We've also seen a lot of work from the Civil War Trust and the National Park Conservation Association to help expand the scope of the Gettysburg historic site.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now the train station isn't covered, even though that's where Lincoln arrived. That was a huge juncture point. And actually, one of the reasons why Gettysburg was so important strategically was because of the presence of the railroad. And so it's not currently protected underneath the preservation law, so we want to sort of expand that.
Are the commemorative coins made out of pieces of, like, artifacts that they found around, or?
No, it's actually American quarters.
Just an American quarter. Oh, that's cool. That's
so
cool.
It's sort of in the same way you have presidential coins and stuff like that, so. You can get those from the U.S. Mint.
Independence Day weekend is upon us. We didn't really talk about food, but I know that ConAgra is doing a lot of lobbying hot dogs. The Pork Council is probably doing something to make sure we have plenty of hot dogs to eat and things like that. What else do we have to look forward to now with this behind us, so to speak?
Well, Bastille Day is coming up on July 14th, and we can talk about wine lobbying and, imports of wine. But actually, more importantly, for those of us who study campaign finance and lobbying, July 15th is the due date for all the second quarter reports. So we'd have second quarter lobbying reports for you. So if you ever want to talk about those in July or August, we could definitely have a time.
Sounds like a plan. We could do a Bastille Day second quarter lobbying report. All the samples, we bring samples in?
We French. Very good.
His name is Dr. Peter Brusso with Bloomberg Government. He's the big data guy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Alan. I hope you had a great 4th.
We'll catch you next Thursday at 11 with more of the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.